92 FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for entertaining us this afternoon. It's Tuesday, the 3rd of August, and this is Game On. Coming up today, Team Ireland are back amongst the boxing medals while the track and field action lights up Tokyo.
The winner on points by unanimous decision. In red, Kelly.
Medal in the bank, and she is through to the semi-finals in the women's lightweight division.
And Warholm comes to the final hurdle. Benjamin has enough. No, he doesn't. It's Warholm all the way to gold. The man who has transformed it, and it's a sub-46 world record. It's an astonishing time. It's not just a world record by a small amount. It's a world record by around 6 meters of track. That is unprecedented.
While the Olympics has us enthralled and sleep deprived, my voice is going a little bit as well, there is still a Premier League season to come and it's just around the corner. Mark Langdon will bring us up to speed as the transfer window heats up.
The England captain on and off the pitch, his influence on and off the pitch is very important, so it's not a good look, is it really, for Harry Kane to be pretty much on strike now for 2 days running.
Conan Byrne is in studio with us to preview another huge night for Bohemians in Europe, plus Warren Gatland on the Lions team he's named for the third test in South Africa.
You're there and you're having a long discussion about selection and trying to get the right combination and thinking about players to start and impact coming off the bench. So, yeah, there's definitely been some really, really tough and tight calls on this tour.
Now you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
So I'm delighted to say Conan Byrne is with us live in studio. Conan, it's been a busy time. There is a lot going on. I mentioned some of it at the top of the show. Have you been glued to the Olympics like the rest of us?
I have. I've had some sleepless nights trying to catch up with most things, especially with Kelly Harrington this morning. It was absolutely fantastic, into a semi-final as well. And I, on the way here, actually, I drove by Portland Row, where she grew up, where she's from, seeing all the bunting all everywhere. It's just great to see, and best of luck to her on Thursday morning.
Yeah, it's been brilliant, and you know, it's great actually to get up in the morning and to have something to watch as well. I'm kind of used to that now. It'll be hard when it's weaned away from us a bit, like the Euros as well, having them. But no, it's been a brilliant few weeks and still lots more to come. So there was plenty of action on day 11. It is day 11, folks, and to round it up for us in Tokyo, here's Damien O'Reilly.
Game On Olympic Updates with Circle K, who say, go Team Ireland, we're with you all the way. Circle K, proud partner of the Irish Olympic team.
Well, Kelly Harrington has won Ireland's 18th Olympic boxing medal after defeating Algeria's Iman Khalif in the women's lightweight quarter-final bout earlier this morning. Harrington will fight her semi-final at 6 a.m. Irish time on Thursday morning. And after her unanimous decision win, the 31-year-old top seed spoke to Joe Stack.
I'm overwhelmed with emotions at the moment. You know, sometimes you think of getting here and I never think of getting medals or anything. Sometimes I think I'm lucky, and I can't be that lucky to be winning all these things and then end up here and have a bronze medal in my bag from the Olympic Games. But everything that I've achieved, I owe to Noel Borkers, my club coach at home, and I owe it to these men and the rest of the Irish High Performance team. You know, and not only this, I owe it to my teammates as well for all the sparring and the preparation, all the support that they've given me out here and we give each other. It's just been fantastic. And the support that I'm getting from the community back home, I've heard that it's late back home, you know. And I'm just so happy, and my emotions really come when it comes to this, because to be able to give them something to be happy about and to sing and dance for is just, you know, just one person like lifting a little bit of a nation. So,
Olympic medalist Kelly Harrington, congratulations from the entire country.
Thank you.
And we look forward to the journey continuing.
And thanks to everyone at home. Love you all.
Meanwhile, Aidan Walsh reveals that he has a fractured ankle, which was the reason he was unable to fight his welterweight semi-final earlier this week. However, he received his bronze medal today, and afterwards, Irish boxing coach Bernard Dunn paid tribute to the Belfast boxer.
Aidan has deserved this. He's worked so hard over the last number of years since he's come into the unit. He's had a great year this year, winning a European medal, and now will be forever remembered as an Olympic medalist.
and it's obviously eased the pain of the damage to the ankle and all the drama of the last few days for him.
Accidents happen, you know, and you know, Aidan's come to terms with it, with the team around them, and having that support really does has helped him.
Quick word on Kelly and the excitement of the days ahead and 6 o'clock on Thursday morning, yeah. Irish time.
Yeah, I was nearly turning blue myself at one stage. Do you know what? Performance from Kelly today was very controlled. Really tricky opponent, really, really difficult challenge, but she managed to get over that step, and we've got this man here coming through as an Olympic medalist. So it's been great to work with this fella over the last number of years, and he deserves everything he's got, and we'll all be here now on Thursday.
Yeah.
Cheering on Kelly.
Aidan, the mood in the camp now and the sense of camaraderie, it has come through over the last number of weeks.
Definitely, like as I say, it's Team Ireland. We're one team. We're all here to do the same thing, and we're all here to support each other, and we're all here to cheer each other on, and that's what we'll all be doing for Kelly on Thursday, to go all the way and win gold.
Olympic medalist Aidan Walsh there. Now to the Olympic Stadium, where there was high drama. There were four Irish athletes in action, but today will be remembered for one of the great races in Olympic history, the men's 400 metres hurdle final, which was won by Norway's Carsten Warholm, breaking the world record in the process. And in the last race of the evening, Elaine Thompson-Herah retained her 200 metre Olympic title, adding to her 100 metres gold. In a moment, we'll hear from Greg Allen and David Matthews. But first, let's hear how Thompson achieved it with commentary from Greg.
And they're away. First time, Minowebo a bit slow, but out of her blocks is Elaine Thompson-Herah, and she is already eating up the stagger of Malinghi. And at the moment, into the home straight, Elaine Thompson-Herah has the lead over Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce. Can Gabby Thomas, the second fastest woman of all time, come back? Nobody's going to stop it. Nobody's going to stop the double gold of Elaine Thompson-Herah. And she comes through to win the gold medal. And the time is 21.53 seconds. And that is the second fastest woman of all time winning the gold medal here. Nobody.
Oh, what a race that was. Elaine Thompson-Herah of Jamaica, the double sprint champion at 100 and 200 metres in Rio 5 years ago, again doing 100 and 200 metres gold. The 200 metres gold was executed tonight in a manner which threatened by, I think, a small chance of a world record, because in the end there was 0.2 of a second there. But Elaine Thompson-Herah, 21.53. We've never seen 21.6 seconds broken by anybody other than Florence Griffith Joyner, the late Florence Griffith Joyner. And that was a real go at a world record. But she's a double Olympic champion again, Elaine Thompson-Herah. She is unquestionably one of the greatest sprinters of all time.
Absolutely. She really now is the queen of sprinting. You know, on the other night when we saw her in the 100 metres, she was so impressive taking gold. And from tonight, from start to finish, she just ate up the top of the bend, down the home straight to take that victory in a national record, 21.53, within a whisker of erasing Florence Griffith Joyner, both from the Olympic record and the world record books.
And we had another attempt at a world record, and like we've had a world record already today, we're getting greedy, but Mondo Duplantis, the 21-year-old, uber-talented Swede, has won the pole vault, 5 clearances over at 6.02. That was the gold medal. And then he had 2 extraordinarily good attempts at 6.19 for a world record. And it was, while gold was in the bag, we could have had another world record. It was that close.
It was that close. He was flawless up with the 6.02, complete clearances. And it was that attempt at the world record, 6.19, his first attempt. It was within a whisker. His singlet just scraped it off. Second one, not so good. And they were built up for his third and final attempt. And he nearly got over. But it's not to be, but it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, because he's got the height and he clipped it on the way down. He got way over 6.19. But you've got to execute the whole thing, and the bar moves and falls, that's the end of the story, but he's got the gold medal. Aething Mo, 19-year-old winner of the women's 800 metres, a stunning performance in 1:55.2, which is obviously within 2 seconds of the world record, but she front ran it from the beginning, totally controlled it, a bit like David Rudisha in winning the 800 metres so sensationally in a world record in London back in 2012. Aething Mo is 19, and the silver medalist is 19.
She bossed that race from start to finish. As you said, a complete display of front running, even pace running, and at no stage did she look as if she was going to relinquish the Olympic gold. It was the greatest 800-metre run for a woman I have ever seen, and that's
full stop. And she's just getting started.
She's just on her journey. It's so, like, she's running way beyond her years. Her tactical nuance is incredible. Like, she's fresh out of, still in college.
And she is, it has to be said, a name that we're going to hear over and over again. Athing Mo is the Olympic champion at 800 metres. We saw a few Irish athletes in action today, and we'll get on to Andrew Costrin in a moment because he's going to be going in the 1500 metres semi-finals on Thursday. Leon Reid got through the men's 200 metres and competed very well in the semi-finals. He was fifth in his heat in 20.53 and seventh in his semi-final in 20.54, but he was competitive all the way to the last 50 metres.
Yeah, you said the word competitive. He ran a great bend and he was on the inside lane of two, so it was a tight lane, but ran a super bend lane. He just ran out of steam in the last 50 metres, but two very credible runs for Leon. He should be happy.
Yeah, now Marcus Lauder, who incidentally didn't progress in his heat back in sixth place this morning. We also had Phil Healy getting to within 0.07 of a second of qualifying for the 400 metres semi-finals. Sadly, very small margins in both Phil Healy's failure to qualify through the heats of the 200 and the 400. But Andrew Costrin ran an aggressive race in the men's 1500 metres heats, finished in eighth place, two places outside of the automatic qualifying spots, but he was impressive and he is so consistent. He always puts in a good show.
Yeah, he's a real honest runner. That's what I'd say about Andrew. Hugely positive race from the start, put himself into position, ran an even pace once again. And listen, his semi-finals on Thursday, Greg, you know, it's five go through and two fastest non-qualifiers. So he's in with a chance. He's in the race.
And we just have to finish with what was the standout moment, maybe of this entire Olympic track and field program. Carsten Warholm, his world record in the 400 metres hurdles final of 45.94, almost eclipsed the glory of his gold because it was a world record by more than 0.7 of a second, converting to around 6 metres of track. And it was his own world record that he beat, and he set the world record a month ago. But that was breaking a world record that had been 29 years old. We saw astonishing athletic history.
I think it's acknowledged around here within the stadium that was probably the greatest ever track race we have ever seen. One world record, three continental records, six national records. He ran 45.94 over barriers. It was astounding.
And Ry Benjamin of America would have broken the old world record by a big margin. He was so close to Warholm, so he drove Warholm not just to the world record but to gold, because his presence really did spook Warholm in the last 10 metres.
The only shame, Greg, is that there wasn't 68,000 others here to see it.
It's been an extraordinary day, another extraordinary day of the track and field programme. Day five is over, but it was absolutely lit up by that world record for Carsten Warholm in the men's 400 metres hurdles final of 45.94 seconds. It was a race to behold.
Well, after he qualified for the men's 1500 semi-final, Andrew Costrin spoke to David Gillick.
Oh man, I'm chuffed. Like, I knew coming into it that I was ranked 41st in the Road to Tokyo ranking, so I knew it would take something big to get into the semis. Like, I just went out there and hurt. Like, it's hot, it's uncomfortable. I knew a lot of lads would struggle with the pressure and the heat and stuff, but just went out and hurt, and it was good enough. Luckily, I think the second heat, I seen that one, and that was slow, so I was like, there's a chance here. I didn't see the first one, but yeah.
Well, look, you know, you got yourself in the mix, you ran aggressively, you put yourself in a really good position to qualify. You've done that, yeah. And now you're into the Olympic semi-finals. So we wish you all the best, and we'll be rooting for you.
Thanks, man. Thanks, David. Best of luck, man. Been a pleasure. Chat to you soon, right? Bye-bye.
Take it easy.
Now, in show jumping, Cian O'Connor, Bertram Allen and Dara Kenny, they entered the games this afternoon in the individual qualifier round. They all had clear rounds, so it's good news from a show jumping perspective, as Damien O'Mara now reports.
All three Irish show jumpers will go in the individual final tomorrow after a strong showing in the qualifier event tonight. All recorded clear rounds. Ninth of the 73 entrants to go with the top 30 qualifying. Darragh Kenny on his Olympic debut set the tone early, recording his round in a time of 82.01 seconds. That was followed shortly afterwards by Bertram Allen in 85.18, with the London bronze medalist Cian O'Connor coming home in 88.66 seconds. With the field now going in reverse order based on their qualification ranking, it means that Kenny will be the penultimate competitor into the ring tomorrow, his time only bettered by Great Britain's Ben Mair. All three will also represent Ireland in the team jumping event, qualification for which takes place on Friday.
And after his clear round, Damien caught up with Cian O'Connor.
Cian, congratulations. I'm not sure I've ever seen you as fired up as you were at the end there. That obviously meant an awful lot to get round in one piece and get round clear.
Yeah, with the new format this year, there's no room for error, so you got to jump a clear in this class really to qualify for tomorrow.
Do you embrace that pressure beforehand? Because presumably you're well aware of how the penalties are racking up for a large part of the field.
Yeah, I suppose our job really relies on the horse as well, and I'm very lucky. I have an amazing horse, all the better that he's Irish. And Kilkenny's new at this level, and you can see him with the lights on tonight. There's a lot more atmosphere in the ring, despite not having crowds. But he really grows in the ring and starts giving everything a couple of feet, so he's a pleasure to ride. Ireland is steeped with brilliant riders. Obviously, a horse at this level need Olympic quality and Olympic stars, and Dara and Bertram certainly have them as well. So it's great that all three of us were able to perform, and I suppose it augurs well for the rest of the week. It gives us confidence as a boost for a team going forward.
Now, in other news from day 11 here in Tokyo, Simone Biles competed in the final of the balance beam in gymnastics, having pulled out of four other events, and she won a bronze medal. The gold and silver was won by China. And British cyclist Jason Kenny's eighth Olympic medal equals the British record of Bradley Wiggins. Meanwhile, Kenny's wife Laura won her fifth Olympic medal, also on the cycling track, and she's only the fourth British woman to win at least five medals at an Olympic Games. Well, looking ahead to tomorrow, as well as the show jumping, Leona Maguire and Stephanie Meadow tee off in round one of the women's golf, while at the Aquatic Centre, Tanya Watson competes in the women's 10-metre platform event. But for now, that's all from Tokyo.
New cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. So Ruby Walsh is on holidays at the moment. He is due back in a couple of weeks. But if anybody is missing their Ruby fix, you can check him out in a new podcast, which was launched today called Core Values, hosted by RTÉ journalist Carla O'Brien. And it explores the important things in Ruby's life. And as you can expect, it is Working Hard and Game On are in there. So please do check that out. We are going to turn our attention now to rugby because we are still in the middle of Lions mania, and today Warren Gatland announced his test for his team for the third test, and he has swung the axe with six changes. But good news for many of the Irish players, there is still four in the team. Bundee Aki will partner Robbie Henshaw in the centre. Conor Murray does drop out with Ali Price coming in, but Jack Conan and Tadhg Furlong are in there. Bernard Jackman is with us now to go through the team. Bernard, I think it's fair to say he needed to make some changes. He has made changes. Has he made the right ones, though?
Yeah, I'm a bit sceptical about the Scottish winger, Duan van der Meer, holding his place. I thought he was quite poor, and I would have went with Josh Adams for sure to come back in, but I would have kept Anthony Watson in the team and brought in Liam Williams. So for me, two out of the three of those are correct. I think Bundy coming back in, we just haven't had the right balance in our centre partnership, and he tried Elliot Daly, Owen Farrell has come in, Chris Harris last week, but at least with Bundy Aki and Robbie Henshaw, you've got a long-standing partnership there, and two very powerful players. So they're going to look to get gain line. Wynne Jones was selected for the first test, but obviously he's been injured, and the scrum has become a bit of an issue. So hopefully he'll make an impact there. But yeah, I don't know. You know, we worked on the game together Saturday, and it was such a big second half from South Africa. It's going to take a monumental shift for the Lions to get back momentum.
Okay, well, Warren Gatland did say that he's looking for more fluidity and some tempo as well from his team. Let's hear him on it today.
I think there's two things here. One is looking at the ball and keeping the ball, and also talking to the officials about making sure that we keep the game flowing. I mean, I think we felt like that every scrum there was an injury slowing the game down. I think we had something like 14 minutes of TMO time in the game, and we've worked pretty hard from a conditioning point of view, and it was, you know, really, really stop start, and that made it frustrating for us. And we want, you know, we want to keep the tempo of the game up, to get the ball in our scrums, to get the ball in quickly at lineouts, to play and to get a flow. And South Africa at the moment don't want to do that. They, you know, everything is so stop started that it does make it frustrating. I know Alan Wynne-Jones was talking to the referee about on a number of occasions about keeping it going, and we had stud changes, we had TMO decisions, we had the referee stopping the game for cramp. So that'll be one of the things that I talk to the referees this week when we discuss, you know, we need to make sure that, you know, we can't have 60-odd minute halves. I mean, I think it's important that we, you know, we keep that the flow of the game, and as much from a spectator point of view, you know, we want to see some pretty good rugby, and we didn't see some great rugby played on the weekend.
Bernard, I don't think anyone is going to argue there with Warren Gatland about the length of the games and looking for some good rugby. Do you think we're going to get it this weekend, though?
No, unfortunately. No, we might get less stoppages. I think
we want people to tune in and listen. Come on.
No, Bernard. I know. No, look, it'll be fascinating, but it won't be free flowing. The Box have one way of playing. That has now got them back into contention. So they're going to copy and paste that. It's just whether the Lions can mix things up a little bit. Ali Price, you know, has come back in at nine. That's a sign that they want to play, even though Liam Williams and Josh Adams are probably in because of the frailties that, you know, the back three showed last week under the high ball. They're both still good attacking players. I don't think the Lions can win this game by copying how the Box play. They need to chase it. So maybe we will get to see more rugby. I definitely think the TMOs, they'll be conscious of how long they took to make decisions. And also, there's probably going to be less of all the pushing and shoving after contentious decisions that we saw last week, which also delayed it. So, you know, I think it'll be a shorter game, but it's not going to be, you know, Barbarians or, a game of sevens. It's going to be very physical, a lot of kicking, and a team that makes the least amount of mistakes will probably win.
We found out today that Kyle Sinclair is available to play. He was cleared today after being cited for possibly biting, which there was no evidence of that. What do you think of him, of the situation with Sinclair, and also the fact that he was the only player cited?
That was a bizarre, Marie. At a time when World Rugby are obviously in the spotlight with all the Razzie Erasmus comments, I think anybody who watched that game expected more sighting. And the one we did get has now proved there was no case to answer, and it was something that wasn't picked up by anybody, you know, live or even in most of the rewatch games. None of us picked it up. So, you know, there was certainly the tackle in the air on Conor Murray. There was a couple of head-high shots throughout the game. There was the Itoje knee on the throat of Damien Delande. So, yeah, Razzie Erasmus is going to get punished for the outburst, but I think Joe Schmidt and World Rugby have a lot of work to do in just making the game quicker, more pleasant on the eye, but also more consistency around discipline, because, you know, it's mental to think that there was no sighting and no red card in that game, given that we saw a lot of stuff that we would normally think is illegal and red cardable offences.
Yeah, and especially because there's so many eyeballs on it as well, you know, so there's so many people watching to see what was going to happen after the Razzie Erasmus outburst as well, and just the fact that there was so much focus on the officials leading into the game that you'd expect that there would be even more focus after the game as well.
Yeah, but the problem is a lot of the sighting officers are inactive for a lot of the season, so as in the TMO now, and we've all got frustrated with how much influence and game time the TMO gets, but whereas historically they just help the referee with try decisions, now they're involved in a lot of foul play incidents. So a lot of the things that the TMO the sighting officer historically had to pick up on gets covered by the TMO during the game and acted upon there and then. So I think a lot of the sighting officers have been asleep at the wheel. There's very rarely a sighting now. And yeah, I think that's come back to haunt World Rugby in a very high profile game when the TMO
despite being involved for 12 minutes, missed the last stuff. And, you know, it was up to the deciding officer to pick it up and he was found wanting. So, yeah, very frustrating from a World Rugby point of view.
So there's no Faf de Klerk in the South African team. We know that he is key to their kicking strategy. Do you think this is going to force them to change now even a little bit what they do?
Yeah, it has. And Reinhardt, the number nine, is a very good player. Cobus Reinhardt, he has been vulnerable to being charged down around the box kicking area. So that's something the likes of Atoje will certainly target. And if they can, you know, put some pressure on him, that may help the Lions. I think, interestingly, for the box, you know, they, for the last two tests, they've gone with a 6-2 split on the bench. So six forwards, two backs. This week, they've gone 5-3. And they brought in the veteran Mornay Steyn, because it hasn't been talked about a lot, but Andre Pollard, the normally ultra-reliable kicker for the box, actually has been poor the last two tests. And Mornay Steyn is a 90% kicker and was involved in the last test series. So him coming back is a sign that Razzie's worried about goal kicking may be the key to winning this. And having someone like him on the bench, you know, it's just giving him a little bit more security. Whereas normally he wouldn't bother carrying him. The trust in Pollard is so high. But I think that's an interesting tactical change from Jacques Nienaber and Razzie Erasmus.
What about Tadhg Byrne, Bernard? Because I know that we were expecting, really, when you think back to the start of the series, to see a huge amount of him in the three games. And now we've seen very little of him in these two tests, and we're not going to see him at all in the third test because he hasn't made the bench.
Yeah, I think it's he's been totally underused. And I think it's a big mistake not to have him involved this weekend. You know, he hasn't really got a fair crack at a whip in terms of game time off the bench. And last weekend, there's an interesting stat. So the Springboks had 70 rooks, 70 wins. So the Lions didn't disrupt one rook of the Springboks. And you've got someone like Tadhg Byrne, who is absolutely world-class in that area in terms of being a menace at the breakdown and getting turnovers. And, you know, the best way to beat the box is disrupt them at the breakdown and starve them of possession. And I just think, while Simmons is a fabulous player, I think that Tadhg Byrne's all-around game, line out, his running ability, plus particularly his breakdown ability, he should be. I thought he should have started this weekend.
Oh, we've lost Bernard. We'll get him back on the line now. But there are a lot of changes on the team and on the bench. And one of them that has raised quite a lot of interest is the inclusion of Finn Russell. They've been crying out for creativity in that Lions team. And Gatland was asked today about the impact that Finn Russell could have and whether or not he is a game changer.
South Africa kicked the ball 22 times in the second half. We've only kicked it 10 times. We've tried to go out there and get some momentum and play some rugby, and we never got into the game in that last 20 minutes or so. So, and that's why there's a couple of changes, and Finn Russell comes on the bench because, you know, he's a little bit different, and the two tens are very good at what they do and quite similar, and he offers us something a little bit different.
Yeah, Finn Russell does offer something a little bit different, Bernard. Do you think we'll see him, though?
Yeah, I think you'd have to throw him on. I mean, they're clutching at straws now. They haven't looked like they can break down the box with the Dan Bigger combination, the Farrell combination. So, look, he's a bit of a wild card to have ready with 10 minutes to go, 15 minutes to go, if you need to change it up. So he's in there. I think he'll definitely see game time unless the Lions are well ahead. But it's a big ask. I mean, he had an injury to start of the Lions tour. They brought out Marcus Smith. So he's going to be cold. And even though he's a very talented player and a bit of a maverick, Jesus, huge pressure on him to come on to win a series, having had such little game time.
So just give us your overview on how you expect this test to go, Bernard, because it is knife-edge stuff.
Yeah, look, absolutely. And, you know, the reason the Bucks got such dominance in the second test was, you know, the Lions' discipline went, and likewise, that's how the Lions got back into the game. So both teams need to manage that, keep the penalties under 10. I just fear with a French referee, given how strong the Springbok maul and scrum was, and how French referees tend to referee in favour of the team that go forward, I just don't see how this Lions pack can actually handle the box, who should be getting better with every game they play. So for me, unfortunately, I think this is a game that the Lions are very much underdogs and will do well to win.
Okay, well, Warren Gatland was asked today about referees and respecting them. Let's hear what he had to say.
These are every 4 years you have the World Cup, and it's and how important the World Cup is. And I think the next biggest thing on the world rugby calendar is the Lions, and you don't want to be in a position where any of the match officials can be potentially criticised or questioned. And we've already had that where, you know, these officials have been accused of being disrespected and haven't made the right calls and potentially been influenced. So, you know, that's been disappointing. And I think for everyone, we need to make sure that we respect the officials as much as we possibly can. They have a difficult job. Without them, we couldn't play the game. And, yeah, there's a lot at stake, and I understand at times we all get frustrated about certain decisions and certain calls, and sometimes you just got to suck it up and get on with it.
Well, Bernard, it is only Tuesday, so given what happened last week, you'd have to expect there's probably a few more storylines to be played out yet before the week is over. Do you think we're going to hear from Razi Erasmus?
No, Razi Erasmus is...
Bernard's gone again. I think on that note, it is probably a good time to say goodbye. As I said, there are lots more chapters, I'd say, to come yet in this Lions story before the third test takes place next Saturday.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide.
On 2FM. Now we are going to talk football, and there is so much going on in the transfer world, as you would expect. Mark Langdon joins us on the line. Conan Byrne is with me in studio. Mark, just to you first, we have to talk about Harry Kane. It's a situation that has been evolving over the last 24 hours. He didn't turn up to training. He has now said that he will turn up to training, but not until Saturday. He's obviously trying to make a statement. He's trying to get attention. He is definitely getting that. But is it going to work in his favour, do you think?
I'm not sure that this tactic is the right one. I suppose he would maybe think that he hasn't got too many options, and he feels like this is the only one available to him. I don't see how this helps the situation, really. If anything, I imagine that Daniel Levy will just sort of dig his heels in even more, because he won't want to be bullied by the player, by Manchester City. Of course, we've no idea what happened in sort of when they had their meeting previously, whether there is some kind of agreement and sort of how loosely that agreement is, because I think Harry Kane, if he should be upset with anyone, in my opinion, it should be with Manchester City, because Manchester City have been sort of, you know, lowballing in terms of the offers that they've put into Tottenham. You know, this is a team that spent, what, 40-odd million on Nathan Aki not that long ago, and that, you know, they've got the money, and they're not paying sort of or offering to pay the kind of money that Tottenham would want and deserve for somebody that has won three Golden Boots in the Premier League, was the top scorer last season, top assist maker, he's won a World Cup Golden Boot, he's the England captain. They're not going to get him cheap. You know, if they want somebody of that quality, it's going to cost them a lot of money. And, you know, maybe Harry Kane should be slightly aggrieved that Manchester City don't think he's worth quite as much as what Tottenham do.
Conan, it's funny really, because he came out and said, or he threw some sort of a source, that he wasn't expecting an overreaction from people, but it was a great tweet from Richie Sadler. He said, England captain refuses to train, breaches contract, stays at home in a strap in order to advance his own career. What did he think the reaction was going to be?
Well, I can't get over it, Marie, being totally honest. He's England captain, he's obviously Tottenham's always captain ahead of behind Hugo Lloris. You agree a 6-year contract back in 2018, yeah, turn up for training. I just can't get my head around it. He has suffered some injuries over the last number of years. Did Spurs refuse to pay him when he didn't play? No. What would happen if they did?
absolute murder. I think Gareth Southgate has a job to do in terms of stripping the England captaincy from him over this. You're looking at the England captain setting an example to young players, not just at Spurs, but from all clubs all over England. And he has showed what a captain and a leader should not do at a football club. And I think it's completely disrespectful. I agree with Mark there about Man City. Obviously, he should be aggrieved with them. This gentleman's agreement is absolutely absurd. We're talking about football, the biggest business in the world. Who would get involved in a gentleman's agreement at such high level optics such as football? I think it shows a huge inexperience in his agent, which turns out to be his brother, Charlie, who signed back in 2018 as well. And we all know Daniel Levy. He's the most stubborn man in the game. I'm obviously not his biggest fan, but why would you let your prized asset go for, again, as Mark said, for such a nominal figure, considering how well and how good Harry Kane is as a professional footballer? Mark obviously outlined his role. He hasn't scored less than 17 goals in his last 7 seasons in the Premier League. And that's including all the injuries that he's had. He just hasn't shown any leadership, any guile, any respect for Tottenham Hotspur, the staff of the club, its fellow players and the supporters.
It's hard to see actually, Mark, how he can just go back there on Saturday when you think of everything that's happened over the last couple of days as well. It would be a very strange situation really, wouldn't it?
It will be a strange situation. I mean, we've seen football dressing rooms in the past and football supporters in the past be quite forgiving, once the season starts, and if he does get his head down, in theory it could all blow over, pretty quickly, if he were to come back and, act professionally and I think behave the way that most people assumed that he would have done throughout this. Obviously, he's got no relationship whatsoever yet with the new Tottenham manager Nuno, wouldn't have met him. Paratici, the sporting director, is another one that may have spoken to Kane on the phone, I'm not sure, but certainly haven't met face to face. So he hasn't really got those relationships at the higher level at the moment. I think in terms of the sort of gentleman's agreement or whatever it was supposed to be, totally agree that this falls down on the agent as much as anybody else. There's no way that for all that people dislike Jorge Mendes and Mina Raiola, they would have let such a prized asset, sign a 6-year contract with no kind of official sort of release clause, if that was in his mind to maybe depart the club within the next couple of years. That makes no sense. I'm sure Tottenham probably would have agreed to that release clause at the time because they would have wanted him to stay. And, it's something that's done throughout Europe really now. When players sign contracts, a lot of them, particularly on longer term ones, will maybe take a little bit less money on a weekly or monthly basis. But what they do is they give themselves that kind of freedom really, where there is a release clause. Sometimes it can be really cheap. We've seen some real bargains be had in that department previously. Somebody like Erling Haaland, for instance, he's got one that kicks in next year for under 100 million. Now, I know that doesn't sound like a too much of a bargain in a depressed market, but if you think how much he cost this summer, it is. So this I think comes down to Harry Kane not surrounding himself with experts in the business, really.
So Spurs are playing Manchester City on Sunday, the 15th of August at 4:30. Who will Harry Kane be playing for, Mark?
I think he'll still be registered with Tottenham at that date. I don't think he'll be playing for Tottenham because, if he's not even going back to training until the Saturday, he's definitely not going to be ready for that opening match of the season. So I don't think he'll be playing in that game, and that probably is for the best, really, given that I expect it to be quite frosty between the two clubs, right up until the deal is either completed or completely off the table. And we know that Daniel Levy will wait until the last possible moment if he thinks that that's the best way to extract as much value as he can, albeit that sometimes hurts Tottenham because they don't get the sort of replacements in quick enough because he's so determined to eke out every last penny.
Right, well, we'll be keeping an eye on that saga over the next few days. In other transfer news, Conan, Celtic have signed with Republic of Ireland midfielder James McCarthy, along with former England goalkeeper Joe Hart. Is it a good move for James McCarthy?
I think so. I think big names were needed. Oliver Neacham has obviously left that central midfield role, and James McCarthy will come in and fill that void and some. But it's as long as he remains injury free. There was an emotional element to his move to Celtic Park, considering his father passed away recently. So it was the ideal opportunity for him to move back to Scotland. He has experience in that league. He's made his debut as a 15-year-old for Hamilton Academicals. He's 30 now, 43 caps, 4-year deal. He's going to hopefully retire at Celtic. So, it's a big boost for that midfield after Neacham's loss. And look, they needed a goalkeeper more than anybody. I watched them against Hearts at the weekend. And then obviously they lost to Midtjylland last week. But with Scott Bain in goal, it was very, very obvious that they needed a goalkeeper. And in Joe Hart, yes, he's probably not the goalkeeper that once was, but at least he has that experience of winning Premier League titles, FA Cups, League Cups. So he has that experience that they need. And I think he's going to be a better option than Scott Bain anyway. So good bit of business. It'll be interesting to see how, if they pursue their interest in Liam Scales now as well, the Shamrock Rovers centre half. There's already fees being thrown out that it could be that break the League of Ireland transfer record of €600,000, which would be great for Liam because he's had a wonderful season so far.
Very good, yeah. We'll be keeping an eye on Liam as well. I've saw that in the news over the last 24 hours or so. And Mark, Romelu Lukaku, so Chelsea have increased their personal offer and are really keen to get him as their new striker. Do you think he's going to end up there?
I think Chelsea must be getting encouragement from somewhere, because you don't usually as a club sort of make a couple of bids, get them rejected, and then sort of think about making a third one unless, you know, you believe that there's some sort of opportunity to, you know, you're just wasting your time, and Chelsea need a striker. And so I'm expecting them to really push hard to get Lukaku back. Inter have had all kinds of financial sort of problems in the last 12 months or so where it led to Antonio Conte leaving the club because he didn't feel like they were able to match his ambitions. They got a lot of money in, over €60 million, for Hakimi, the right wing back to Paris Saint-Germain, and that has eased the pressure on that. So I don't think Inter desperately need to sell Lukaku or his strike partner Lautaro Martinez, but it might get to the stage where they feel like it's too good an offer to turn down. If it sort of, you know, if it reaches in excess of €100 million, then that is for in a what is a depressed market really outside of the Premier League, then that could become tempting, albeit that he has been absolutely brilliant. I think he's added new dimensions to his game in Italy. But one of the reasons he was, I think inspired into last season was because of Antonio Conte. We don't yet know if he's got that kind of relationship with Simone Inzaghi. I wouldn't be amazed if he was a Chelsea player at the end of the season, because Chelsea have got the money to sort of turn heads really and sort of force the issue here.
Kieran Trippier, Conan, Manchester United they're still shopping, so they've had Varane and they have Sancho, and it looks like they want to add Trippier to their list.
Yes, and what a wonderful Euros that he had. I remember being in studio here when England were playing, and he was their main creator, and he was really, really good. And obviously he's just won a league title at Atletico Madrid, and I think Manchester United need to strengthen that area, and Kieran Trippier is the ideal man. He's already played in the Premier League, he knows what it's like, he knows their players, and playing alongside Rafael Varane at Manchester United, at a club as prestigious as that, could tempt Kieran to make the move.
And Mark, you did mention Martinez and Arsenal and the links there, and also today there was links with James Maddison moving to Arsenal from Leicester City.
Yeah, I think James Maddison is sort of, I don't know how secretly he's doing it, because it feels like a lot of people know, but there's certainly been murmurings that he would be sort of encouraging a bid from Arsenal and would like to leave if that opportunity was there. And we've seen that Leicester, if the money's right, will sell their players, because they did it with Harry Maguire, they did it with Ben Chilwell. They want, proper money. They're again, not going to sell cheaply. Ian, this has been a transfer sort of rumour that's been rumbling for a long time now, and I think Arsenal have got room in their team, albeit that Smith Rowe has done well in that position, with Odegaard moving on and Ceballos sort of also sort of no longer at the club after their loan spells ended. I think they have got room in sort of that attacking midfield to bring somebody sort of creative in there to just link the play through to Aubameyang. So wouldn't be I suppose amazed if that one did happen, because I think Leicester back themselves every time to be able to sell these players and then bring somebody in that's cheaper and turns out to be just as good. I mean, they've been one of the best sort of exponents of the transfer market in recent years. Lautaro Martinez, again, there's no way Inter are going to sell both of their forwards, but if they don't sell Lukaku, then maybe they will Lautaro. I would just say, apart from Arsenal, I think Atletico Madrid are also very interested in the player. He's a smashing player as well, Lautaro Martinez. He reminds me a bit of Sergio Aguero, and he would enhance Atletico Madrid or Arsenal or anybody else. I mean, he's somebody that potentially maybe Tottenham would be interested in, if they did sell Harry Kane. And the fact that he sort of is opened...
Oh, we've lost Mark now, so I think it's time to take a break because we do need to look ahead to the Bulls game.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Now, there is another huge game at the Aviva Stadium tonight. Bulls are taking on Pauk at 7:45. Adrian Eames is there for us. Adrian.
Yeah, a very good evening to you, Marie. Yeah, less than an hour to go to kick off here at the Aviva Stadium. Bulls fans will be making their way here in big numbers, all 8,000 of them, although there may be a few Greeks here as well, because tickets absolutely flew off the shelves, gone in 15 minutes. In terms of team news, well, Bohemians unchanged, so it's that tried and trusted 11 for Keith Long in terms of taking on a very, very good and strong PAOK Thessaloniki side. Really, the odds stacked against Bohemians over the course of two legs. They include Shinji Kagawa, a Premier League winner with Manchester United back in 2013. Success too in Germany with Borussia Dortmund, where he won a couple of Bundesligas and two German Cups as well. They also include Austrian international Stefan Schwab, who was in the Austrian squad at the Euro. So plenty of talent in the PAOK ranks. And they've got a good pedigree as well. Great Cup winners this year, league winners in 2019. And it is a very, very strong league when you include the likes of Olympiacos, Panathinaikos and AEK Athens. But the team is Bohemians unchanged. It's a lovely dry still evening. The clouds a little ominous overhead, a little grey in the sky, but we're expecting a very intriguing contest. I think by most people's conjecture, really, if Bowes can hang on in there and still be in the tie at the end of the first leg, such is the quality that PAOK present, that it's really an uphill task for Bohemians. But if they can draw or possibly lose narrowly, take it into the second leg, still in with a fighting chance, that would be relative success. But they've done well so far, but this unquestionably a real step up from what they faced before Dudelange last week, and before that Starnan of Ice. But they're in it, they're here, and they're in it to win it, as they say.
That's it, Adrian Eames. Thank you so much. Conan Byrne is with me in studio. Would you go along with Adrian there, Conan, that if they can stay in with it, maybe lose narrowly, but at least try and be in the game?
I think if they lose narrowly, I think that's curtains for Bohemians, being totally honest with you, because they're going back over to Greece then in 30 degree heat, where the Greeks will be very comfortable in those conditions compared to the Bowes players. But look, Bowes are in a great run of form at the moment, Marie. One defeat in their last 13 games. They've only conceded one goal in their last five. And it kind of reminds me of the night they played Red Bull Salzburg over a decade ago, and they very nearly put them out. I'm intrigued at how the front three get on, Liam Burt, Ali Coote and Georgie Kelly, because they've been absolutely exceptional in these last couple of games. The way that Keith Long has them set up, if they win the ball when the other team are attacking, it's just the quickness of how they get up the pitch, and the emergence of Dawson Devoy, Ross Tierney, and even Jamie Mullins at 16 years of age in this team. Keith Long has signed really, really well. Tyreek Wilson has come in, Rory Feely has come in from St. Pat's. I do think that they need to get something out of the game today in order to give them any chance of progressing, because Pauk are a very, very good side. They've brought back in Razvan Lucescu for his second spell in charge of the club.
as Adrian said there, they won the double in 2018-2019 season when he was in charge. So yeah, and look, to put it into context, Pauk are rated the 104th ranked team in Europe. Bowes are the 380th team. So just to give context to how difficult a situation, how difficult a game that Bowes are going to be in over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and there are quite a number of recognisable names in that team as well, and Adrian did mention a few of them, but it is Kagawa that stands out from his time at Dortmund and Manchester United. But just a word on those young players that you mentioned and the great job that Keith Long is doing with them, but something that they are doing as well is they're really rising to every single occasion. So they're going out there on the biggest stage in a busy, well, not full house, but sold out Aviva Stadium. And they are giving the best of themselves.
And I questioned this from those young players a couple of weeks ago when they made their debuts at the Aviva Stadium. I said perhaps the occasion might get to them. Probably should have, obviously, Dalymount Park isn't fit for purpose, but would they be able to compete? As I said, would the occasion get to them, going into new surroundings, a new dressing room? But it's just brought them to new lease of life among those players. And as I said, Dawson Devoy is only 19, Ross Tierney, who plays in the number 10 position, is 20, Jimmy Mullins is 16. But even the front three, like Georgie Kelly, the man who's scoring so many goals for Bowes, he's only 24 years of age, and he's the eldest out of that front four. So it's incredible what they're doing. But yeah, Adrian mentioned Shinji Kagawa there about the 97 cap Japanese player, but there's also a Euro 2016 winner for Portugal who's captain of the team, Vitorinha, and he plays at left back this evening, so it'll be interesting to see how Ali Koot does against him, because in my opinion Ali Koot is probably Bohemian's best player this season. He's gone completely under the radar with his moves and his kind of disguised runs that he makes for the team, so it'll be interesting to see how that gets on. But it's going to be a fascinating game and really looking forward to it.
Yeah, really well, and look, it'll be a great occasion as well. All those 8,000, well, I'm sure there'll be some Greek fans there as well, but 8,000 football fans anyway in the Aviva Stadium, it'll be brilliant for them. And look, whatever happens, I think Bowes have shown exactly what they're capable of as well, and it does feel like it is the start for them, so it'll be interesting to see how that one goes. That's all we have time for, Conan. Thank you so much.